Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Podcast Manager Show. If this is your first episode, welcome. I'm so excited that you're here and you're here for a really great episode. I am really excited to share this one because I am chatting with Marcy Page, who is my podcast manager. And if it surprises you that I'm a podcast manager, it shouldn't, because we all know, at least if you don't know, you'll know soon, that podcasters can't get much done if they don't have a podcast manager. And I'm myself included in that. I knew I would hire a podcast manager eventually. I thought I would probably wait 6 months for my show to be 6 months old. But I ended up needing to hire one a lot quicker than that because I couldn't hold myself accountable to getting all the things done. So Marcy is that person for me behind the scenes, but her and I have actually known each other for 2 years. She was the first person to take my program back when it was called the Podcast Manager Jumpstart, and it was $50, and it just was a combination of skills videos, and it's obviously grown and pivoted a lot since then. But Marcy was the first person, and she tells that story on this episode, so I'm excited for you to hear it. But we also get to hear about Marcy's journey from becoming a virtual assistant to niching down into podcast management, landing a role as a subcontractor, and then what she did with that experience. So I think this is a really unique story. All of our stories are unique, obviously, but this one is really unique because she was a subcontractor and really values high quality editing. Her and I work great together because I'm like big picture thinker and she loves being in the details. So if that is more how you work in the details, then her story is going to be really great for you. All right, let's go chat with Marcy. Hey there, I'm Lauren, and you're listening to the Podcast Manager Show, a podcast for podcast managers. Each week, we cover the technical and tactical aspects of running a profitable podcast manager business. With over 90,000 new shows starting each month, podcast managers are in demand. And I'm here to help you land your dream clients while reaching your monthly income goals and without working like crazy. Are you ready? Let's get to today's episode. Marcy, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate you having me on.
Yes. So this is such a special episode because Marcy is my podcast manager and we work on a couple things behind the scenes in the business. And now you get to be here so we can talk about your business.
Yeah. And it's really funny, when we met a couple of years ago, I was kind of thinking all along, oh, it'd be so nice to work with Lauren. So it's kind of funny 2 years later to be able to work for you.
Right. I think you and I's relationship and story is such a testament to networking and how, like, you know, we connected through another program that we both took, Overwhelmed to Overbooked, and we just met each other and were online friends. And then we worked together. You took my course, like all of that. It's just kind of unfolded over literally years, which is weird to think about. When was it that you first took my program? Do you remember?
I was actually the very first person who bought your course. And I remember it was funny because I knew it was coming out. So I kept watching for it. And I had bought it before you were ready to accept people in. So you messaged me and you're like, hey, how did you find this? And I was like, well, I knew it was coming. So I kept watching for it. So,
okay. Now that you say that, I totally remember that. I love that that was you. What happened was I was so busy with client work that I was like, people were asking me, like, how did you start as a podcast manager? Because there was nothing around at that point. And this is the very end of 2018. And so people were asking me about that. And I'm like, I do not want to have to put together a program. Number one, I just didn't think that people were that interested, you know? And so I didn't want to like pour a bunch of energy and tears into a program that, when really I loved just working for clients. But I remember like you and a couple other people were like, if you could just like put together anything, just so I can learn a little bit, so I can do this too. And I'm like, okay, I will. And I just arbitrarily said, I'm going to launch this mini course on January 15th of 2019. And I literally stayed up until like 2 a.m. for like 4 nights in a row to just bust through it. And before it was even like the landing page was up, I remember you. Yeah, it was you that bought it. And oh yeah, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, and I was just nervous. Like, is this going to be valuable? So like, oh my gosh, one person bought it. Like, this can't be good.
Yeah, well, it's funny. It was perfect timing too, because I think I signed up for the Overwhelmed Overbook course probably, I don't know, a couple months beforehand. And I was at the point where I was still working casual at another job, and I've just never been happy working traditional jobs. So I've had a lot of different businesses over the years, and none of them really kind of took off to make enough to make a living at it. So I thought, okay, no, I'm done. I don't like getting up every morning and doing my hair and my makeup and going to work. So I just really need to get serious about it. And so I did get Michaela's course, and I had kind of in the back of my mind that I thought, you know, like this podcast editing and management, like I can't remember exactly how I heard about it, but I thought it'd be so much fun. So then when I met you in the course, I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And then you were always so friendly and helpful anytime I had questions. And I remember you even let me edit one of your episodes on your previous podcast. So I got to practice a little bit, and I was like, okay, this is exactly what I want to do. So when you decided to do the course, I was like, nope, done with all of the other admin stuff. Like, that's all I'm going to do. So yeah, I was really excited for it.
Yeah. Wow. Like, our businesses have grown up together, basically.
Yes.
So yes, to walk back on this episode, we're going to talk about how you got started and where you're at now. And specifically, you got started, you took my program, but then you got started more as a subcontractor, and you did some of that to begin with. So I'd love to dive into that. So you've already said, you know, you took Overwhelmed to Overbook to kind of start your freelance business. Then you took my course back when it was a jumpstart program and I only taught skills. So then from there, tell us what happened.
So I definitely found it difficult to find clients in the beginning. And of course, the first one I got, it didn't work out so well. She happened to be a really super picky client to start with. And then because I was still in that learning stage, there were some things I didn't know right off the top of my head, or I had to go back and fix a couple of things. And I could just tell that she was frustrated with that or wasn't totally happy. So that really like hurt my confidence a lot. And so that happened within the first 2 months of taking the course. Then I was like, oh gosh, what am I going to do? I really need to get clients to really get better at it. So I came across someone in, I think it was Just Busters group, and they mentioned that they knew somebody who was looking for an entry-level subcontractor. So I thought, hey, you know, why not? Let's see how that works. Get me some experience. So I ended up doing a test project right away, and he was really happy with everything. What happened also is that he only uses Adobe Audition for editing. So basically, I got thrown into that right off the bat, and I had to use that to edit my first episode. Anyway, it worked out. Love Audition. So I'm kind of glad that happened, because I just love the editing process way better. I'd find it easier and quicker and a little bit more options for editing. Mm-hmm. The pay was really low, like much lower than I expected it be for a subcontractor position. But at the time, I didn't have any other clients and I really wanted to get some experience. And right off the bat, he said he had 5 episodes a week that he needed done. So I'm like, okay. In the beginning, I found it a little bit frustrating, because like I had heard you talk about before, it takes so long in the beginning, especially a lot of the episodes were an hour long. So they were taking me probably 5 and 6 hours.
Painful.
And so it was working out to be like $5 an hour sometimes. And I was super frustrated. But my husband reminded me, you know, kind of look at this like a paid internship or getting paid to go to school, because he was also showing me different things. Like he'd record a video and say, hey, this is how I would handle this situation. Did you notice that there's a feature in here to do this? You can do this to fix this. So I really learned a lot more about content editing. And I ended up working for, I think, a full year before I had replaced my income. Actually, I had doubled my income, and where I felt confident enough to say, okay, I'm done. I knew that was a guaranteed income, so I was hesitant to give it up at first.
Right.
But after about a year in, I started getting a couple of clients and I felt comfortable to say, I'm ready to move on. And even though the work was hard, I feel like I learned a lot. So I think overall it was a good experience and I'm glad I did it.
Yeah. So now you feel like you know a ton to then like implement in your other clients. Did you immediately, your rates like triple? Because you're like, okay, I am like experienced now. How did you handle that jump, especially mentally?
So that is part of the reason I felt more confident to be able to jump my rates up when I did start taking on clients. I mean, the very first one or two were definitely on the lower end. Mm-hmm. But by the time I finished a year with him, then I felt definitely comfortable with charging. I wouldn't say I'm on the highest end, but I'm definitely in the middle, kind of on the upper end. Mm-hmm. And once I got a couple clients paying that rate, of course, then you feel much more comfortable doing it moving forward.
Right.
And then I also met somebody along the way over the summer who was able to teach me how to use RX8. So now I can do some of the audio repair. So I get to run the files through there first. Almost every one of my clients uses Zoom for recording, which isn't always the best quality, even though it's pretty good. But you run it through iZotope and it does fix a lot of the audio issues that sometimes come up with Zoom. So that was the other reason. Just in the fall, I started adding iZotope as part of my editing process. And now I just feel so much more comfortable. The first year I only did editing. I was super nervous about adding in show notes and some of that other stuff. I've never done it before. So I think that was part of the reason too, that it held me back from getting clients a little bit sooner. I know not everyone talks about how quickly they get clients and what they're charging and that sort of thing. But sometimes you're in the groups and you're seeing other people saying like, oh, I just got a launch client, or I've done 7 this year. And I'm like, I've done 2. What am I doing wrong? Right. But you have to remember that everybody's story is different.
Yes.
And you might get there a different way, but you do get there in the end.
Right. Ugh, I can't agree with that more because, yeah, some people, they... Number one, you don't know what experience they have coming into it. Now, most people, you know, in my course and in the space that we kind of hang out, they don't have audio experience coming into this, but they might have marketing experience or just something about their experience that allows them to be a little bit more confident. And they land like 4 launch clients in 2 months. And you're like, wait, how did this happen? This person, you know, just joined or whatever. And it's so, so important not to compare. Because if we compare ourselves, then we'll just get discouraged and then we're out of the game. Instead, if you just commit yourself to the process and know, okay, I'm on my own path, like you said, and you don't give up, then you're bound to succeed. You have to succeed because you're not going to give up.
And that's true. And I think that some people who do have some of that marketing background, they can probably pick up some of those launch clients a little bit quicker if they are really able to sell themselves on that side of the process. I feel like for myself, my editing skills are really good. So people will say, you know, I chose to go with you because I was really loved the samples of audios of other clients you've worked with. I think it depends on what the client's looking for. Are they looking for a really polished episode? Are they looking for help with their marketing? It just depends on what they're looking for sometimes.
Yes. And that's one of the reasons that I think you and I really complement each other is because I knew that you really valued that high level of editing because of just the way you talk about it. Like even on this episode, I'm sure people can tell that like the quality of the audio is very important to you. And that's obviously important to a lot of clients. Some clients, honestly, not so much. So do you find that the clients that you have now or that you've attracted, that you said that they comment on that when they're choosing you, do they listen back to the episode generally?
So it depends. I have a mix of both. I have a couple clients who really are not overly concerned about the audio. You know, sometimes I remind them, you know, can you send me the 2 separate tracks? Because I can definitely do a better job with my editing if you do that. And still, they send it to me on 1 track. So, you know, there's only so much you can do at that point. I have one client that I've worked with for almost 2 years, and she is much more, I want to say picky, but she just has a very high quality. She records on Squadcast. She always listens to the episode. She always gives me 1 round of revisions, never anything mm-hmm. overly big, but she'll give me the time snaps and say, hey, I really don't like where I laughed when the other person was talking. Can you just take it out? So it's just a personal preference thing. Mm-hmm. So I kind of have a mix of both. I have a couple that are more on that end where they just want to make sure it's really nice and polished and sounds good. And I think they appreciate when someone comes to them and say, wow, I really love the quality or sound of your podcast. Whereas other clients are like, you know what? And just as long as I'm getting the content out there and you've made me sound good, like you took out my mistakes, then I'm happy.
Yeah. Whenever we first started working together, which I want to say was October, maybe, mm-hmm. I told myself like, okay, Lauren, you have to listen to the first episode that Marcy edits because like you just have to, because I knew I wouldn't listen to... I was going to listen to the bare minimum. So I was like, you have to listen to 1 episode just to know But I trusted you already because we knew each other and I knew that you really valued high quality. So I was like, I knew I didn't have anything to worry about. But like, you have to listen to one just so you can like check the box that yeah. you did like your quality control and then move forward.
Yeah. And I have had some clients say, you know what, I'm just going to, and I always tell them like, if you want to listen and I'll do one round of revisions, if you want, just make sure you give me the timestamps and I'll go back and fix those things. But almost everybody just says, you know what, just listen to the first couple. If they're happy, then they never listen to them again. And some people are like, I don't want to listen to my episode. I just want to know that it's going to get done. It's going to go out and I don't want to hear myself.
Yeah, that's so common for podcasters. They don't want to hear. I mean, there's the whole like, you don't like listening to the sound of your voice. I've gotten used to that piece of it. But I don't want to like dissect the way I worded things and think like, oh, did I leave this out? Did I leave this out? Like, that's the piece that I don't want to like listen back. But do you find as a podcast manager that do you give your clients feedback like, oh, hey, this was a really great episode, or I liked this about the episode? Do you do any of that with clients?
Depends on the client. Some of them are a little bit unsure about what to put on for content, and they definitely value some opinions on what kind of shows to do more of or a direction to take. Whereas a couple of them are, they already know what they're doing and they're really comfortable with their content planning and they always have good content. So it really depends on the person.
Yeah. I've just noticed that like as I've progressed through my business, now I have a lot of clients that they'll never listen back to an episode, but they want to know like, hey, what did you think? Did that come across okay? And so it's like you kind of morph into this more of this podcast coaching role. You could still be doing the nitty gritty as well, but they're like, you know the show. Make sure that I'm like, did you think this was okay? Because I don't want to listen to it again. I'm going to be overly critical or I don't have time. You know, I don't have time to listen to it again. What did you think? So you have started to do strategy calls, right?
Yes. I just made that available this week. So I haven't actually done any yet, but I feel like I'm at the point now where I can definitely help with people who are just getting started. Maybe if they're not ready for a podcast manager, but they just want to learn how to do some of the stuff like uploading to Libsyn or putting show notes on their website or maybe creating graphics just so they can get a handle on things at the very beginning. So we could just record the session, they come back and watch it later and learn how to do it on their own.
Yeah, I love that because it really makes it our type of work more accessible because working with a podcast manager monthly, like that's an investment. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of creativity and experience and all of that. But it's also, I love to see people that want to start a podcast and they have no idea where to start. And maybe they YouTube a bunch of stuff and they piecemeal it together, but they're missing some pieces that are like, eh, you really want to add this or like your music just is not faded or whatever, those little tiny things that we know so well because, you know, this is a world that we've committed ourselves to. So I love that that's like a lot more accessible to someone who maybe their show is not bringing any money. They don't have a business. So it's like they're not going to invest right now in monthly support.
Yeah. The reality is not everybody can afford it. And there are just some people who I'm like that myself with a lot of things, especially when I'm starting out. Like, I want to learn how to do it anyway, just because if something happened and I did have to take it over, I'd want to know how to do it. But yeah, it's just a much more affordable way to get some one-on-one support. And this way, you can show someone how to do specifically what they need to do for their show, because everyone is going to be a little bit different. And I think with video now and being able to record your screen, and it's just so much easier to create some processes and then just share it with the client and they can go back and rewatch, and it just makes it really easy for them.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So let's talk through some of your clients. You said in the beginning, you were only doing editing. What does that look like now? What are you doing with your clients?
Now I have all except for one who is on a break because she does seasons. I only do editing for her, but all my other clients are management. Two of them are basically full management and two are almost full management. So that means editing, uploading, scheduling, writing show notes, putting the show notes up on the website, creating the graphics for their blog header and their social media graphics.
Mm-hmm. So you said that in the beginning, you're like, oh, I'm just not ready for that. How do you feel like confidence wise? How long did it take you to feel like you really got your head around show notes and maybe social media graphics?
About a year in of just doing editing, I had somebody reach out and said they just wanted show notes done. And so I just did show notes for her. It was a topic that I was familiar with. So it was a parenting podcast. And so I just started doing it for her. And she also needed her blog header updated and that sort of thing, which I'm familiar with Canva. So that wasn't a problem. I wasn't sure if clients would start asking me to create graphics though. And I wasn't sure if I could. She already had her templates. She just needed the show notes done and put on her website. I've had multiple businesses over the years, so I'm very familiar with WordPress, newsletter programs, and all that sort of thing. So I'm very familiar in that space. And so I can usually pick tech things up fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. But the actual just writing the show notes, I'm like, I don't know if I can do it. And I think it's going to have to be only for clients that I understand the topic, like maybe parenting or fitness or nutrition or business or personal development, something that I really enjoy to listen to. Mm-hmm. Once I worked with her for about a month, and this happened to be right before the pandemic hit. So I worked with her for a month. She was super happy with everything. So I felt like, oh, maybe I can do this for other clients. And anyway, we only got to work together for a month because she had to put her podcast on hold because of the pandemic. After that, then I did start working with other clients doing the management. I actually picked up another client a month later who was looking for everything. And then like a month or two later after that, I got another one. So it just kind of snowballed after that. Definitely once I added in the options of managing the podcast, it made a big difference for finding clients. Because I even had one of the ones I was working with, he said, you know, I don't mind if you're going to subcontract some of this stuff out. Because someone else who had been working on his team before was doing show notes, and she thought that she was going to be still doing the show notes when I took over the other parts. So he said he didn't even realize that his manager had been subbing out to this other person. So he's like, I don't mind however you want to handle it. I just want to pay one person, deal with one person. You can do it however you like. If you have a team or on your own or whatever, it makes no difference. So that's when I started to realize that I think that there's probably a lot of other people the same way. That way the client only has to manage one person, have communication with one person, and then it's just way less headache for them.
Right. It comes back to the fact that podcasts, and now that so many more people are starting podcasts, it's like they're looking for the stress and that all of the tasks to be lifted away. You know, they don't want to say, okay, I'm going to look for the cheapest editor and the cheapest this and the cheapest that. Like, that's one piece of it, is making it financially work for them. But also, just there's so many things that you have to do to get this show out there that it makes total sense. And I love that he said that to you. So you could just like hear it out of the horse's mouth of like, hey, I just want one person. Like, deliver what you will, however you want to do this. Just when the episode goes live, everything needs to be there, right?
Yeah. And he's also a client that says, I'm not listening to my episode. I just don't like to listen back. I know it's going to be done, and that's it. And I think that's kind of how I sell my packages. I say, look, you just have to record the raw audio and you don't have to think about anything else after that. If you want to listen back to it and make some suggestions and have some changes that you want done, that's totally fine. But you can know that you can record your episode and everything is going to be done after that. You don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, would you describe yourself as like a detail-oriented person?
Very. Probably to my own detriment, which is the problem I ran into when I was originally subcontracting. I remember it was taking me so long to work on the episode. I remember messaging the guy I was working for, and I said, how long does it take you to do these? Because I feel like I'm taking too long. It shouldn't take this long. And he never actually gave me a time frame, but I said, okay, I'm going to do things a little bit differently on the next one, and you tell me if you notice a difference. And the next time I did a little bit less. And he's like, this is totally fine. I'm like, oh my gosh, I am so overthinking some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I assumed that you were going to say that because I can just like tell that that's how you are. And I just want to point out that, like, to me, if I was just starting out podcast editing, I would 100% think that you needed to be detail oriented. I mean, you're literally cutting out tongue clicks, you know, like it's so detail oriented. But I'm actually like not detail oriented at all. I'm very much like a top level thinker. I'm just more speed versus detail. But I think I've been successful at podcast editing because I love so much about it, but I love like the cleaning up the conversation. I find so many things that are very satisfying about podcast editing. So I think that's the reason why I love it. But then you're very detail oriented, and then that's probably one of the big reasons that you have succeeded at it. So I think a lot of different types of people can succeed when it's like something that is really fun for you.
Yeah. And I do like the editing part of it. I actually really love launches. I've only had the opportunity to do two so far, but I really enjoyed it. I like mixing the music. I like putting it together. I like having everything come together, and I just love that whole process. So I really want to focus on getting some more launch clients because I really do enjoy that part. I even said to my husband one time, I really wish there was a way I could just do launches and then hand everything else off to somebody else, like have a team. They can handle the management afterwards. That's like the fun part. But I don't know, I've just started working with a VA and I have someone who's been helping it with show notes. I haven't had the greatest experience with it. I've heard a few people that it didn't work out. And I don't know if it's just because I'm picky. That's what my husband tells me. He's like, you're just so detail oriented. Nobody's going to be able to live up to your expectations. But I don't know. I feel like that's kind of like the brand that I've made for myself. So I just don't feel right having somebody else come on and kind of do it not to my standards, I guess. Mm-hmm. I had a couple clients that I was offering. You could have a basic editing package or a more detail oriented package. That way I could have two prices for clients. But that was just a big mistake because it didn't matter when I got clients that said, now you don't have to do the detail. I couldn't leave that stuff in.
Yeah.
I just can't leave the lip smacks. I can't leave any of that. So I was like, that's just not me. So I'm just not doing it anymore. You don't even get that option.
Right. And I thought you were going to say the client didn't even want that. It's like once you get rolling, I mean, I know there are actual podcasters out there that they send their editor just the timestamps of things they want edited out. You don't even have to listen to the whole episode because they're like, just cut out these things. That's not someone that I would love working with because I love the creative side of editing, but those people exist for sure. But yeah, most of the clients that are like, oh, it's not going to be that much editing. It's like, it's always a lot of editing.
Yes, I would agree with that too. So that's why I don't offer those basic packages anymore. I'm sure there are people out there who are very well spoken and they probably need minimal editing, but those are few and far between. And if somebody gave me an episode that just gave me the timestamps and said, fix this and leave the rest, I would have a really hard time not listening to the full episode just to see if they missed something.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there's just things that we do in normal conversation that don't sound good as a podcast. I think maybe that's one thing that people are forgetting is that, you know, if you and I were sitting in a room chatting, there would be silences. There would be us talking over one another. But when you're recording a podcast, I mean, I try specifically not to talk over people. And when you edit out some longer pauses, perhaps, or things like that. So there's just certain things that are normal in conversation that to me, don't sound good in a podcast.
Yeah, that was something else that I really learned to do well when I was working as a subcontractor because content editing was the only thing I was doing. I wasn't fixing any audio. He would do all of the audio processing, give me the file, and I would do the content editing and he would do the final stuff. So I was just going through listening to it. He would always say, it should sound like it has not been edited.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it wants to sound like a conversation, but a well-polished conversation. And then so things would get cut if it didn't make sense. I always had episodes that were on multiple tracks so that we would just move stuff around if people were talking over each other so that you could hear everybody. Everybody got a chance to talk. I think I really learned a lot of skills by getting that feedback from somebody else who had been doing it a lot longer than I had. And I think that was really valuable.
Yeah. And whenever you say content editing, I want to make sure that the listeners understand what we mean by that. That's whenever you're cutting out words and phrases that people use that are not necessary. So one thing that I specifically think of when I think of content editing is when someone starts a sentence, they say, but, and, so, and then they say the thing that they're trying to say.
Right.
You don't need the but and the and. So you cut out the but and the and you can't tell that it was even there because it's not necessary versus something that's more embedded in the way that someone speaks. You know, certain people have laughs that have this big crescendo and then they laugh and they have this fallout from their laugh. And it's like, as an editor, you want to almost clean that up, but it's their laugh. And as you get more experience, you're like, wait, I shouldn't touch that. That's their laugh. I can't touch that. Or I say all the time. And I remember there was someone in the course that said, background, I have a piece of audio in the course that you can edit. That's me. And someone was like, oh, the example in the course, I tried to cut out all of her likes, but it just sounds bad. And I'm like, well, number one, that's me. And I know I say a lot. My dad tried to get me to stop doing it when I was 12 and it didn't work. But that's the way I talk. And if you were to cut out every like, number one, it'd take forever and it wouldn't sound natural. It'd be too choppy, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was told too. There's kind of a delicate balance. I think like 80% is the number they say. Remove about 80% and leave about 20%. Mm. So that there's still some in there. So it sounds more conversational. But for someone who does say it a lot, it does actually sound better if you take some of those out. And like you said, you get better at that the longer you've been doing it. For content editing, it could be just taking out some of those filler words. Sometimes it means taking out a whole sentence because they started a sentence and then kind of repeated themselves or just rephrased it differently. You just don't need it. You can take it out and the flow is much nicer. And then you end up with a shorter episode too that's more condensed and to the point. You're still getting all of the important stuff in there without some of that extra filler stuff.
Yeah. So I want to talk about a project that you and I work on together within my business, and that is my certificate of completion. We have this process with people that go through the podcast manager program where they can submit a 2-minute clip of an edited sample and then also a summary of the episode. And this can be a real episode or a fake episode, whatever they have. And then they also submit a graphic for us to review. And when I thought about this, I thought about this a lot before I launched it. I was like, do I really want to do this? I knew that doing an actual certification was a really big endeavor because you have to have like continuing education and you have to basically monitor the people that are certified. So I knew I didn't want to travel down that road. And instead, I wanted to go with this certificate of completion route. But whenever I was thinking about doing this, I was like, I'm not a details person. And so I don't want to do this by myself. I will not enjoy doing this if I have to do it alone. And it'll feel really like heavy for me to just listen to someone's audio and have to give them feedback. But I wanted to provide it, you know? So I thought of you because I was like, Marcy is like the queen of details. I just knew that. So I was hoping that you would help me because I knew we would do a good job together because you had the detail and I was more of like going to compliment them on everything.
I feel like you have a much nicer way of giving feedback. I'm just a little bit more blunt. Sometimes I'm not sure how to like phrase it, but
yeah, but I appreciate your bluntness. And my feedback delivery goes back to being a group fitness instructor. And we were told that to give someone a compliment sandwich. So you compliment them on something, you tell them something that they need to work on, and then you compliment them again. And it's not, you have to give them real compliments. Like it has to be a sandwich. It can't be just like fluff. But that's where my delivery comes from. But yeah, so whenever I went to launch this, I was like, okay, the only way I'm doing this is if I can get Marcy to be on board with doing this with me. So we launched that, I don't even remember, like maybe September or so.
I think so.
Yeah. And so now we're giving people feedback on their audio. Do you find that it's easier, harder? How are you feeling about like being in that role?
I definitely like helping other people figure out what they need to do or maybe not do and kind of give them some guidance. With the opportunity to give some feedback on some of this stuff, we often see a lot of repeat things happening, editors making the same mistakes or things that they can improve on. That's one opportunity for you as well, because that's something you could maybe address in the group or in your course, especially if it's something that you see all the time. Pacing is something that I really struggled with in the beginning. And one of my clients, the one that's very detail oriented, she used to comment and say, hey, I feel like it's a little too rushed here. And so that's when I really started to figure out it's perfectly okay to leave a pause. And so I started leaving a little bit more of those and she was so happy with that. Then when I started editing with other clients, I realized, oh, it doesn't need to be shortened and condensed as much as possible because it feels too rushed and it doesn't sound as conversational. So that was a skill that I picked up and learned from one of my first clients. That's something that I notice also with a lot of new editors is the pacing, making sure that there's the right length of pause in between sentences, or maybe the thought was just something that needs a pause afterwards and not cutting out all of them and shortening them as much as possible because it just feels too rushed.
Yeah, you're right. There's just something about the way we speak that sometimes a sentence needs double the silence than maybe another sentence. Like once you get in there and you start listening to people talk, you're like, oh, I need to leave a little bit more space here. But I had the same problem when I was starting out. Like if I see no audio, I'm going to delete it. And when you listen to it back, it's so rushed and not natural. And I've learned that lesson over the years, kind of the hard way, but I've learned it. And I think it's different for every host every interviewee. It's like the way that we talk, some of us talk faster, some of us talk slower. So if you have someone who talks slow, you have to slow down your editing. You know, like your mind when you're editing, you have to be like, okay, this is the pace that I'm moving. I'm not moving at triple speed.
Yeah. And I've heard people talk about how they speed up their audio sometimes to edit. And I don't know how that works because I don't know how you get the pacing right. But I can totally see how if you're just looking for maybe some of the big stuff, you could work a little faster that way. But I don't ever do that. I have one client that sometimes talks too fast. And I don't know with Audacity if it has this feature, but you can actually grab a section and slow it down in Audition. So I kind of like that. If someone gets a little too excited and starts talking really fast, you can take a clip and stretch it out and it slows down.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I actually recently got feedback from a listener of my client's show. So a listener contacted my client and said, hey, did your podcast manager accidentally export this at like double the speed because it was so fast? And this is recently, like, not that I don't make mistakes, but that didn't happen. She doesn't listen back. So she asked me like, hey, she just like sent me the comment. And I was like, no, that person just spoke very fast. And I worked on it, but it wasn't going to matter. That's the way that this woman spoke. And I think you can actually listen to episodes at halftime in Apple Podcasts, though. So that's an option.
I know a lot of people listen to podcasts back at a faster speed so they can get through them quicker.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if you had someone who was already talking really fast, you probably wouldn't want to do that. But
right.
I have had clients ask me, you know, oh, did I like talk too fast in that episode? And like, oh, no, it was all good. And I can slow it down a little bit if it needed to be. But you'd have to be talking really fast, I think, for it to be a huge problem.
Right. Yeah. I listen to books on audio through Audible. I listen to those at like 1.4x. So not even a 1.5. And I don't normally notice it. I don't even notice that I have it sped up, but I've tried to do that with podcasts and I always notice it. There's something about it. I'm like, I can't listen to podcasts. I never would do that with editing, but just like listening to other episodes that I don't edit, I try to speed them up and it's just too fast for me.
Yeah, no, I don't either. When I'm writing show notes, I did transcription for a few years before getting into this. So I have a foot pedal, I have transcription software, so I can throw the episode in there. And I'll play that back at like 130% so that when I'm just making some notes, I can listen to it really fast. But other than that, yeah, that's the only thing I would ever speed up.
Mm-hmm. So does that just so that you can like get some more ideas for show notes?
So when I'm writing the show notes, I'll play it back at that speed. I think I've heard you say that you take notes sometimes when you're editing for show notes. I can't do that. I get so focused on the editing that I can't. Sometimes I even have trouble pulling a clip when I'm doing the editing. I have to go back and do it when I'm doing the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just get so focused on editing, I can't hear anything else.
Yeah, I love hearing just everyone's process because I've talked to enough people at this point that I see like we all have our own way of doing it. Like you just said, some of us can write show notes based off of listening to the episode. Some people listen back. It's just, I love hearing that everyone kind of makes it their own based on what works for them, I guess.
Yeah. And the other reason I like listening back to the show notes that way is because that's kind of my second pass through. So if I missed something, There was one time where there was one clip during the episode that somehow the volume got turned up on it, you know, just little things like that, or something got muted or, you know, those kind of things. Like you'll hear it when you listen back to do the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen other editors talk about listening to the episode once it's edited after they're done. And a lot of them will listen back to the full thing afterwards. That's not something that I do. It does add a lot more time on. So I feel like I'm kind of getting a 2-for-1 by doing that when I'm doing the show notes.
Yeah. I also don't listen back because I'm just like, no. Like I said, I'm just not detail oriented. Sometimes what I'll do, because I find that like whenever I pull clips, I'll pull clips while I'm editing. But let's say I'm almost to the end of the episode and I only have like one clip and I'm trying to get three. What I've learned is that good clips, if it's like a 30 to 45 minute episodes, then good clips are usually around like the 10 minute mark. So I will just go back to 10 minutes and listen for a couple minutes and I'll get another quote. It's crazy. It's like, number one, a lot of my clients are kind of do the same style. It's like they talk about the person's story and then they get into the meat of things. And it's like that beginning stage of getting into it that those are like, I think the key good quotes come from. So I usually will listen back just for that, but I also don't listen back to the whole thing.
Yeah, that's interesting. I might have to try that.
Yeah, you'll have to see. So we talked about the fact that you've added some strategy calls to your business for this year. What else are you hoping, planning for 2021?
So I've been tossing around the idea of doing the VIP days. I'm still trying to structure that out. Obviously, that would look a lot different. I'd have to have more people on my team to do some editing and different things. They'd have to be available that day. So I'm not sure realistically how that would work out, or maybe it would look more like a 2-day thing. Mm-hmm. Not sure yet. That's an option that I'm looking at. The other option is I really would like to put together a DIY package where you can sign up and work with me with a coaching session for an hour, but then I also provide you with, you know, your Trello board for your launch or your Trello board for your management, show you how to organize your files and those kind of things, just to kind of get somebody set up. So just a different option than the management route.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I could see that second option almost being like a VIP day where they could do a call with you and you could give them material of, if it was a launch situation, they could write their show description. They could design their cover art like right then during those middle hours. And then you could give them feedback as kind of the end of the VIP day. But I've been thinking through all of these different ways that us podcast managers can do VIP days, because I think there's a lot of potential, but you'd really have to think through, okay, what's really going to make sense for me and the time and the client's needs and all that.
Yeah, it's a little bit more of a done with you process, mm-hmm. so that they're kind of doing some pieces, I'm doing some pieces. Maybe it's a half day, depending on what they are looking for, or maybe a full day. And maybe there's a follow-up the next week or something like that to kind of finish up some things. Then they would take a week or two to work on some of their pieces of the project. And then you could meet up again a couple weeks later to finalize some stuff.
Yeah. I think the phrase VIP day makes you feel like, okay, it has to be one day and it has to be really, really, really valuable, because that's VIP. Whereas before the VIP day term became popular, they were more called like intensives. So if you think of it like, okay, I have like this package of like 3 intensives, whether it's get a show launched or you just feel like that's what you need to give your value. There's so many cool ways to think about how you can help podcasters.
Yeah. And I think for podcast managers or producers who are kind of looking at doing this option, you're probably right. It's going to look more like intensive type days. And your intensive package might be more than one day. And it could be 2 days in a row. It could be one day, 1 week, another at the end of the month. There's a lot of moving pieces and a lot of things that need to get done to get a podcast together. And just the editing part itself takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So realistically, to try and do a whole launch in a day doesn't really make sense if you're including the editing and show notes and everything in there.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, I hope that if you still are looking for a VA and someone to help you with editing, I hope that ends well, because I know it's really hard to hire people, especially it's so hard for me to hire someone to edit for my clients, because I feel that same kind of control. It was easy, a lot easier for me to let go of that of my own show, because I'm like, my mistakes, that's fine. Like, I'm not a perfect person, you know, but like with my clients, it's harder. So I hope that that piece, if you kind of go for that this year, that works out as well.
Yeah, I've tried a couple times. So far, I haven't found the right fit yet, mm-hmm. but I'm hoping to at some point. As you know, like, you only have so many hours in a day you can work. So you kind of get capped at a certain point. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do everything on your own, and the biggest problem that I've run into, not that I mind doing all of those things, but I can't take days off really, because all of my clients are on a very regular schedule. So for me to take a couple weeks off over the summer or during holidays, like, it's really difficult, because, you know, I've talked to clients and sometimes a couple of them, they're really great at batching at the beginning of the month. And so I can work ahead on those, but not everyone does. Sometimes you get stuff last minute. Makes it really tricky to try and take days off. So I was kind of hoping, even if I had a couple people to help out part-time, that maybe it would make it easier, even if it just looked like getting some of that stuff done up ahead of time before taking days off, and then just having somebody on hand if something kind of comes up during your holidays.
Yeah. And I did a episode previously about the way that I took my maternity leave, because I felt the same way. Like, if I'm going to take a month off, then I'm going to have to be really diligent about planning and getting things done beforehand. So if anyone's interested in hearing how you can kind of plan for vacation or a maternity leave or whatever, go listen to that episode. I can't remember what number it was, but we'll link it in the show notes so you can hear that. Because yeah, you definitely have to plan it out.
Yeah, for sure.
Where can people follow you?
So you can follow me on Instagram, Marcy D. Page, and on Facebook, it's the same, Marcy D. Page. And my website is marcypage.com.
Yes, and you have a brand new website.
I do. Thanks to Mackenzie Matter, who has some super awesome templates. It really helped to kind of get things together. And I think it turned out great.
Yeah, it really did. I already knew your branding, obviously. And so then when I saw it translated into a website, I was like, oh my gosh, this looks amazing. So everyone, especially if you're a podcast manager, you should definitely go look at Marcy's website because it's really good. Well, Marcy, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. I think it will be so valuable for people to hear just another example of how you got experience and how you grew your confidence and where you're at now. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for hanging out with me today. Come connect with me over on Instagram at Lauren Wrighton or in the Podcast Manager Mastermind on Facebook and let me know what you liked about this episode. You can always find the links and resources mentioned in this show over at laurenwrighton.com. Until next time, I'll be cheering you on.